contention to win a national championship. Sorry if I sound a little bit worn down or tired. It's been a long several days. Back from Indianapolis again for the second straight week. I was in the lovely city of Indy. I've experienced all there is to offer there, Brad. There's nothing more for me in Indy. And I'm off to Philly. I know the Friars come to Chicago and I won't be there. It's unbelievable. But how are we feeling, my friend? Are we alive? Are we energized? Are we just ready for the games to restart? Like, where's the mood as we head into to week two of the dance?
I mean, there is no way that I can wait until Friday. I mean, this is ridiculous. I mean, this is obviously the first time Providence has been in the Sweet 16 since I was a fan, because I was in a toddler the last time that they were. But I mean, this is an enormous layoff to just kind of sit with your thoughts and your hopes and dreams. I will say
the Providence Friars made me more money this past weekend over at the PavadaSportsbook.com than anyone else. I mean, that was unbelievable. That was outstanding. Thank you, Providence.
The whole thing was absolutely preposterous. And then, I mean, they were like the most popular upset pick.
There were definitely a lot of people who are making up like, oh, no one thinks we're any good. Like Paolo's tweet. Like Providence, like actually no one thinks they're any good. Like no one.
It was funny. This Kansas fan account on Twitter posted a kind of old takes exposed thing with seven different bracket shows, and everyone was like, I'm picking Iowa over Kansas. And so the Kansas fan was really rubbing it in everyone's face. But if you look at the bracket that they were showing, six of the seven people had South Dakota State over Providence. The only one who didn't was Andy Katz. So when Andy Katz is the voice of reason, we're all in trouble.
Yeah, we're in big trouble. But
everyone was wrong. It was Tyson Tate, Mike Schmitz, Borzello.
Was I on the list?
Rothstein, no. But like everyone had South Dakota State.
My expert bracket was viewed 375,000 times, and I picked Providence. So
yeah,
I did my part. Narrative, I guess. To the voice of reason. I did my part.
So. Like, everyone had Providence losing the first round. Obviously, everyone had Iowa beating them. But even when it was Providence-Richmond, I saw a clip of ESPN had Richmond. Titus and Tate had Richmond. And Providence just blew them out of the water. They were dead.
No. They didn't. Brad, the shot quality. Don't forget about the shot quality. Providence lost.
The first time I saw shot quality was when Providence played at Villanova to end the season, and Providence lost by 2, and shot quality said that they actually lost by 17. And I was like, oh, it's just another thing that hates Providence, you know, that's stupid numbers and nerds. Then in the Big East tournament, their game against Creighton, which I watched
You had never seen shot quality until like March 1st?
No, I had heard of it, and I had seen the one-offs, but I like... Somebody retweeted that Villanova one, and then I followed the account on Twitter. It was like looking through it on the day that Providence lost to Villanova. You fast forward 2 weeks to the Big East tournament, or a week and a half. Providence gets destroyed by Creighton. It was one of the worst games I've ever seen. I watched every minute of it. And the shot quality comes out. It says Providence lost by 4. And like, all right, this is the stupidest thing in the entire world. I mean, the whole thing is, you are not allowed to miss shots, and you're not allowed to make too many shots. You can only make like the exact middle.
The optimal thing to do is make 40% of your shots. Yeah.
Yeah. There are no upsets allowed. It's just the better team should always win. It's incredible.
I truly believe that like 50% of the purpose of it is just for like coaches to get into their office after like a long day and like bang their hand on the desk and be like, you know what? If we had made shots, we would have won this game, and the shot quality proves it. But anyway. No offense. I think they're doing important work. I just think they're the shot quality scores for these games are not overly impactful. I think there's other stuff on the website that's outstanding. Simon does a great job, but like the scores are a little off sometimes. I'll put it that way.
Yeah, I would love to get like a full explanation. So it's not only the percentage, right? It's factoring the person shooting, it's factoring in where the defender is, and time and score, because like in this Richmond game, right, Providence was up by 30 with 10 minutes left, and they really took their foot off the gas. So that's why
they actually lost. Yeah. Game doesn't count. I hear, Brad, though, that you have an important opinion to an important thing to share about the NIT, and I hope it's not that you lost your entire house betting over at Bovada this past week, because if you did, it'd be pretty bad if Brad can no longer pay the rent next month. What's the NIT story we need to hear before we get into the NCAA tournament, the actual important stuff that happened in college basketball this
past? Right. Every good NCAA or every good college basketball podcast, the day after a great tournament weekend, has to start with the NIT.
Open with the NIT, of course.
Now, Xavier is playing Cleveland State. Travis Steele's the coach.
Yes.
They barely win the game. Travis Steele gets fired. The AD says it's because he saw that no one was excited for Xavier to play in the NIT after blowing their third straight season down the stretch, which I don't think he needed to see the attendance numbers to tell him that. But anyway, so he fires Travis Steele. Jonas Hayes is appointed the interim coach. What is the first thing Jonas Hayes does in their NIT game against Florida over the weekend?
Did he play Deontay Miles?
No, he moved Zach Fremantle to the bench. But everyone was saying all year long, you can't play Fremantle and Nunchi together. The first opportunity, Jonas Hayes moves Fremantle to the bench and Xavier wins by 15 over Florida. Obviously, I didn't watch the game because I don't watch any NIT games. But that made me laugh hysterically. And I really hope Jonas Hayes was trying to tell Travis Steele all year, like, hey, why don't we just try starting Colby Jones at the four, which is what I had in the preseason, by the way. And putting either Nunji or Fremantle on the bench. And I hope Steele's like, nope, we have this all under control. We're playing well.
Yeah, that worked out quite well for them. It's now Xavier as a new coach, Sean Miller. We'll get to the coaching carousel at the end of the podcast. There's a lot to get to. There's been a lot of action there. And you know we love the carousel. But before we do that, we need to get through the first weekend of the NCAA tournament and kind of look back while looking forward. So the way we're going to do it basically is I ranked the top 16, the 16 teams remaining. I ranked them 1 to 16. So what we'll do is we'll go through them in reverse order. So from 16 to 1, and we will talk about what surprised us, what didn't surprise us, et cetera, about their path and everything worth discussing. So we start with St. Peter's, who is the worst team left in the Sweet 16. I start this by saying that as great as St. Peter's has been, I think they're going to get completely destroyed by Purdue.
I thought that they were going to get destroyed by Kentucky. I was on, obviously, the UConn game, watching that upset, and I saw that the St. Peter's score was close. I watched it. You know, a media timeout segment in the first half, but I was saying, you know, Kentucky's going to pull away. I'm going to stick here with UConn. And the Creighton game started. I was back, you know, I was going back and forth. Then UConn lost. There's like 5 minutes left and it's still close. So I watched the last 5 minutes in overtime. Just a stunning game. Stunning game. And I mean, what is in the water that all of a sudden we're getting all these 15-2 upsets? Doesn't make a ton of sense, but
it is wild.
Like, I mean, we had Oral Roberts last year. Seemed like last year it was Ohio State didn't take Oral Roberts seriously. This year it seemed like the narrative was Kentucky was too tight. I saw somebody tweet that Calipari in the postgame press conference was like, I was begging guys to shoot, like with the implication that they were freaking out and they didn't want to shoot because they didn't want to mess up. But anyway, that was a stunner.
What was wild? So what was wild about that game, Brad, was like, I was there. The first 5 minutes of the game, St. Peter's could not score like at all. Like they couldn't make a pass. Like they looked completely like lost. And I was like, you know what? This makes sense. St. Peter's is terrible on offense. They're good enough on defense. They're hanging in. But like eventually they're going to give up some points. Like I don't know that St. Peter's is going to score 40 points. Like I didn't. And then all of a sudden Darryl Banks hit like three threes in a row. And I was like, oh, okay, well. You know, maybe St. Peter's will be here for a while. And then Kentucky kind of made its push. And they got it up to like 6 or 8 with like 4 minutes to go. You're like, okay, you know, they're going to be okay. And all of a sudden, they go like St. Peter's goes zone. And Kentucky looks like they've never played against a 2-3 in their lives. It was unbelievable. Like, they were just completely baffled. know, Eddard all of a sudden is going crazy. You know, they're getting the stops. Like, it was just, it was unfathomable to watch. I mean, just completely unfathomable. And look, did they get a little bit lucky? Like, I don't want to discredit Murray State. Murray State's tremendous, right? They've had a great year. Matt McMahon deserves all the credit he got. The players are good. But, like, it was absolutely a break that Murray State was their seventh seed, not like Florida. You know, like last year, Oral Roberts had to be Florida or like Ohio State, right? Like, St. Peter's was basically like Morehead State playing Murray State. Like, that's like a game that like very much happens regularly. Like that's an upset that happens. It was not the same as like if they had to play another high major, but they drew Murray State. They beat Murray State. They made Murray State look very uncomfortable, took them out of their, you know, didn't let KJ Williams get going. And all of a sudden, St. Peter's of all places going to the Sweet 16. And again, I think the early number was like 12.5 over at Bovada for St. Peter's against Purdue. I will like unload my entire bank account on Purdue. Like I don't see how that game is close. It makes zero sense to me. Like they're not going to be able to guard on the interior. They're not going to be able to guard the threes. The game is going to be at Purdue's pace. Like they don't, you know, they can't guard Ivy. Like what? There's nothing, you know, St. Peter's can do to be in this game. At least like Oral Roberts, you kind of felt like, oh, you know, like Max Asemus and Kevin O'Banner can like hit shots. And that's kind of what they did. I just don't like, I don't see how this game is at all close, but hey, maybe I'll be wrong again.
Yeah, I mean, I don't see any way that they're going to beat Purdue just because look at all the problems that Texas had with Edie.
Well, and like, think about how dominant Purdue was in the bye games this year.
Yeah, exactly. And I think St. Peter's are just gamers, right? Like that. I think that's the explanation how they can beat Kentucky, beat Murray. They played Providence really tough. They had me freaking out.
When was this?
I think it was right after Thanksgiving, where Manaya and Bynum were out, and Banks had like 20 something points, and they, you know, they were really scary, scariest bye game of the year. And then I think that they probably just don't care as much about the MAC conference games.
Yeah. No, I mean, like, I watched them like multiple times. Like, I watched the MAC. Maybe it's because I didn't watch Oral Roberts as much or Florida Gulf Coast or any of those teams of the years. Like you go through and you're like the UMBC upset obviously stands on its own because it was a 16-1. But you go through like the twos over the 15s over the twos, right? Like, Norfolk State had an NBA player in Kyle O'Quinn. Lehigh had an NBA player in CJ McCollum. FGCU was like athletic and had a, you know, like at least they were like very athletic and like scored the ball. Who else has done it? Oral Roberts had the best score in the country and Max Asemus. Like
Middle like, Tennessee not, had
Giddy Pop. They were really
the best player. Yeah,
but, yeah.
Yeah.
Like that was not a, you know, that team wasn't as a 15 worthy. I mean, like, look, St. Peter's, the comparison for St. Peter's is Abilene Christian. It's absolutely Abilene Christian. It's like the grit and grind, defense first, motivational coach. Probably don't have a single guy that you would take at a high major on the roster. You know, like if you remember, Abilene had one guy transfer up, was Joe Pleza, and he averaged like 6 points a game at Wichita. You know, like,
yeah,
it's definitely that is the comp, but beat like a better team. You know, beat theoretically like one of the five best teams in the field. So it was a shocker. Again, I don't think we either of us have much to say in terms of their chances of next round. But hey, you know, we'll see. Do you have any further thoughts on the Cox?
Nope.
All righty. Let's move on to Iowa State, who, no matter what the number was, I'm pretty confident that you could have profited over at Bovada by betting some unders this weekend because they didn't top 60 points in either game. But here they are headed to the second weekend. TJ Otzelberger has done a really nice job. Someone like Old Takes exposed me. I didn't get any traction of my tweet when they hired Otz of when you can hire the seventh best coach in the Mountain West just to appease the boosters, you have to do it.
I mean, everyone's going
to
be rushing.
I actually still kind of think he might be the seventh best coach from the Mountain West last year. Like, right. I still think he's worse than Nico. I still think he's worse than Linder. I still think he's worse than Craig Smith. I still think he's worse than Dutcher. Like, those guys have, like, really, 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 really good track records. But
no, I mean, everyone's rushing to kind of praise Otzelberger here. And, I mean, a Sweet 16 is nothing to sneeze at, but they were 7-11 in the Big 12.
No, they had a great year, like, for sure. Yeah. But, no, I mean, they have their limitations. They're a very scrappy team. They got a very nice draw with LSU being kind of
coached out,
and then Wisconsin being not very talented, and Johnny Davis not being healthy, and Chucky not playing in the second half. But look, they had to win the game. They did. How surprised were you by this run?
I was. I mean, in my bracket, I had LSU beating Wisconsin.
Right. So you expected Wisconsin was vulnerable. You just didn't think it would be Iowa State.
Yeah, I gave Iowa State zero chance. I didn't even want to watch that LSU Iowa State game. I watched a good chunk of it. LSU just couldn't get over the hump. And you know, Tyrese Hunter shot the lights out against LSU.
Kalstra and Brockton. Holy cow! In game two.
I've always been a Kalstra guy.
Yeah, but he hasn't made a shot in 3 years.
I know. That's he's a shooter who can't shoot. And
there's Chris Monroe and Eric
Trevor Cooney, I think, is the big one. Where just one day you wake up and it's like, this guy went from a liability to like the best player on the team, and he can't miss shots anymore. No, but they built a really nice roster out of the transfer portal. Patting myself on the back, everyone had them coming in 10th. I had them coming in 8th in the Big 12. So I totally saw the Sweet 16 run coming.
Yes, you're the lone non-hater for the
but the team I did have 10th was the TCU Horned Frogs. So
yes, TCU had a good year, very good year, nearly beat Arizona. We'll get to Arizona in a bit. But Iowa State will draw the number 14 team in my ranking, or no, excuse me, the number 13 team. So we'll just do that, and then we'll go to Michigan. We'll skip around a little bit. So Miami will face off against Iowa State for a spot in the Elite Eight. It reminds me of the year that Dayton played Stanford for a spot in the Elite Eight. And you're like, well, none of these teams are nearly Elite Eight worthy. But hey, one of them has to be. So Miami can't score. Miami can't defend, but they can really score. Iowa State can't score, but they can really defend. It's going to be an interesting game. Miami upsets Auburn. I was not surprised by this at all. I was in my bracket. I just felt like if they could get past USC, their guards were going to be the better guards in the game against Auburn. Auburn, you know, what was crazy about it was like the thing you kind of said was the concept with Auburn. It was like, oh, you know, at least you'll get good play from Jabari and Walker Kessler. Like the guards may suck, but at least you'll get Jabari and Walker. And Jabari and Walker Kessler shot like 3 for 22 combined. And here Miami is. Miami playing like that junk defense, kind of scrambling around, and Wardenburg protecting the rim. So it's ridiculous.
Yeah, Miami has like a top 15 KenPom offense, or I think they're 18th. And Iowa State, when I checked last night, was 5th in KenPom defense. So this is a war of styles. Now Miami can spread you out and play small, but like playing Jordan Miller and Wardenburg at 4 and 5, and then Anthony Walker, like that's not that small. No. You know, like they're not like totally going micro small here.
And Jordan Miller's very good.
Yeah.
He's very, and very good.
The reason why Miami's in the Sweet 16 is because they have three guards that can attack off the bounce and really hit shots. And they're going to go up against a really stingy Iowa State defense. That's a crazy contrast of styles. I have no idea who's going to win. I could easily see Miami's shot making come back to earth with Iowa State's pressure defense. I've seen Iowa State, you know, beat the crap out of Xavier and Creighton earlier in the year, where, you know, especially the Creighton game, it was like Creighton's not gonna get the ball over half court right now.
So my take on it is that the only way that Iowa State can beat anyone is if they turn you over, because if they don't turn you over, then they're like too inefficient offensively. Like they have to take more shots than you to have a chance, right? And you know, against Wisconsin, Iowa State took 58 shots. Wisconsin took 47. So even though Wisconsin shot a better field goal percentage, I believe Wisconsin shot 14 for 48. 20 for 58 or 14 for 47. Yeah, I think it's like pretty even. Maybe I'm wrong. Like the field goal percentages are relatively close, but the game is won because Iowa State just takes more shots. You know, I think they need that. And I just don't think they're going to be able to turn over Miami. So I think I lean towards Miami. I lean on them. I think Bofa, that's the number at 2.5 right now. I would take that. So I don't know. We shall see.
Great season for both.
Oh, huge.
I mean, Larrañaga was on death's door, like during the season.
Literally
death's door. And then they beat Duke. Syracuse chokes against them twice, and that gets them in the field. And then they beat USC. I didn't see what happened at the end of that game. It was like a 7-point game with like 40 seconds left, and I said, "All right, I'm good to go pick up dinner." And I came back and I checked Twitter.
What were we getting for dinner?
I got a cheeseburger sub.
Ooh. Fancy.
It was very good.
Do we need to apologize to the ACC?
No.
Is that a thing?
From like a realistic perspective, right? The single elimination tournament doesn't erase a whole season, right? Like it wasn't like people were saying how good the ACC was during the year. It was, wait a second, how is Notre Dame 15-5 in the ACC and not in? It was backwards like that. It was like they saw the results and then they were like, well, wait a minute. Like, how can this team be bad with such a good conference record? Even the ACC supporters weren't, you know, waving their pom-poms until the first round of the tournament. And I mean, if you look at the teams that the ACC team has played, I mean, no one was saying USC was good, right? The whole narrative around USC was, they were a paper tiger. They hadn't played anyone. Why are they ranked? They're in the 50s in KenPom. Texas was a punching bag. Alabama lost Quinterly 3 minutes into the game. And everyone was like, Alabama's losing the first round because they were so fickle. And then the last one was, Marquette, who I think people probably gave the most credit to Marquette, but they
people
were probably the worst,
no
worst
yeah,
out of
like,
all those teams.
Marquette was not very good by the end.
They were getting the most credit out of all those opponents, but they were actually the worst.
Yeah.
So the tournament's gone well, but ready. So we keep on moving the goalposts. Okay, the Big 12 is the best because they got all their teams in the second round. Well, it's possible that all the Big 12 teams could lose in the Sweet 16. So are they now not the best if they have zero teams in the Elite Eight? No, they're still the best conference, clearly, from whole seasons of work.
That's fair. I do think that, like, I think there was an assumption that, like, North Carolina and Notre Dame and Wake Forest weren't that good and they were just running up numbers. I don't think that's fair because of how bad the non-con was for the league. But I also think that it's, like, dumb to spend as much time as we spent on the whole, like, conference strength debate. So anyway,
next year just play better in November and everything will be solved.
Yes, let's hit Michigan, speaking of teams that did not play very well in November or December for that matter, or January, and I don't even know if they played well in February. They just kind of like they traded off wins and losses. They finally, you know, so it was very funny. So there's media availability the day between games, and Jace Howard and Terrence Williams were at the podium, and Jace, I think, was the one who joked. He's like, yeah, you know, like Hunter Dickinson was walking around the hotel this morning saying we need to scrimmage the managers because, you know, we've been winning one and then losing one back to back to back. You know, scrimmage the managers to lose the game, and then we'll be good to go against Tennessee. And Hunter jokes that game did happen. I'm skeptical, but
yeah.
Whatever the case, the Wolverines found a way to win two in a row. They needed some pretty nice 3-point variance. I didn't check the shot quality score, but I'm pretty sure it would have favored the Vols. But Hunter Dickinson played really well. Eli Brooks hit that ridiculous running hook.
Timeout. There is no way that Michigan won the shot quality.
No chance.
Upsets are not allowed. Anyway.
Yes. But no, I mean, I thought they did do a good job, though, running Vescovy off the 3-point line. He's so important. Kenny Chandler is really good. Like, it was a really fun game, kind of up and down. But when Josiah James, Zakai Ziegler, and Santiago Vescovi are combined 1 for 15 from 3, you're probably gonna lose. And that running hook shot by Eli Brooks to win the game was pretty nuts too. So Michigan survives the opening weekend barely having Devontae Jones. He did not play against Colorado State. He barely played against Tennessee. But they got some big plays from Diabate, from Cranky Collins, from Terrence Williams. They just had enough to keep fighting. And that was after they got blitzed early by Michigan or by Colorado State, excuse me. I mean, they look like they were in your house. They look like they're going to run out of the gym. Colorado State's playing great. And then all of a sudden, they like, kind of turn up the heat, blew up a lot of their like dribble handoff action. And that was it for my Rams.
Yeah, so I didn't watch much of Tennessee, Michigan. I watched the start and the Providence game started, and I couldn't focus at halftime.
Fair enough.
But, you know, I was a Tennessee hater all year. I said that they didn't have as much pop in the scoring department as they needed. I have no idea if that was the case or not. I know down the stretch, Josiah James was hitting shots. The role players were starting to play better, and Vescovy was like a legit best player. That didn't match up with my interpretation of their talent. But and this whole thing with the Rick Barnes can't win and Marshall. Listen, no one can do anything with the narrative until they do it, right? Jay Wright can't win in March. Tony Bennett can't win in March. Mark Few can't win in March. I think there was a Bill Self can't win at all. No one can do it until they do it.
It's very funny, though, that, like, people are trying to do the Brad Underwood now. Like, Brad Underwood lost the two top 10 Ken Pom teams in the NCAA tournament. Now he can't win in March. It's like, what are we doing here, people? But anyway, no, yeah, Rick's going to take that one on the chin. It is what it is. But, like, look, if they don't shoot 2-for-18 from three, they win that game going away.
And I saw a bunch of Tennessee fans be like, we need to fire Rick Barnes, you know. What are we doing here?
What are you gonna do? Replace with Matt McMahon?
Like, would Rick Barnes ever be the first coach to be Jamie Dixon twice? Like, he gets fired from Texas, they hire Shaka, and like, oh geez, I wish we had Rick Barnes. Goes to Tennessee. After a while, it's like, why can't we make the Elite Eight? Why can't we make the Sweet 16? Let's fire Rick Barnes. And yeah, they hire Matt McMahon, and they're back in the middle of the pack, and it's like, geez. What happened to Rick Barnes?
But no, Michigan advances. They're going to play Villanova. I don't like the matchup there, but
for Michigan or for Villanova?
For Michigan.
I think the one thing in Michigan's favor is they got an enormous 7'2" dude with a lot of skill, and they pair him with a incredibly athletic.
Villanova is so good at like creating mismatches. And every single time, like there was a couple of plays where Tennessee got switches on Dickinson on the perimeter. It was so ugly. Like, he couldn't stay. Couldn't even attempt to stay in front.
Well, Villanova can't go by anyone, right? It's all back and down, so.
Oh, they can go by Hunter. You could drive by Hunter, Brad.
I'm a little worried about this game for Villanova, but because, you know, a lot of these teams that are doing really well, like, I had actually sent off a tweet the other day. Just, like, thinking back, it's crazy to think. I had Richmond ahead of both Providence and Iowa in the preseason. I had Richmond being like an 8 seed. I had them up there with like Michigan State and St. John's in like that early 30 range. I had Providence 44, I think, and I had Iowa in the middle of the NIT. And you look at Michigan was a team I had in the top 5. UNC, I think I had at 6. So Memphis just played a great game. I had them very high. So a lot of these kind of raw talent teams are kind of creeping back into the public discourse after shaky seasons.
It is a 5-point spread at Bovada for that ball game. So keep an eye out there. Next up, next team on our docket. How about North Carolina? ACC win a ridiculous game against Baylor. That they simultaneously deserve to blow out and also lose. But look, I mean, RJ Davis is playing great. Brady Manick is playing great. Baycott's really good. They don't have a bench, but I think they kind of figure out that if they just like play these five guys, it kind of works. And that's enough where like they're a very real threat to go to the Final Four.
Dontre Styles gave him some minutes. He was not scared in there.
True.
He was He was very aggressive. Kind of crazy that Kerwin Walton has been completely sidelined. But yeah, Manek has been
on fire. Thinking he's gonna be over with our boy Ben Johnson in about a month.
I agree.
Keep an eye out.
They need a one and a two in the portal.
They need a one, a two, a three, maybe a four, probably a five. I mean,
wait, is that Jameson Battle leaving?
No. Okay, they don't. They need a one, two, three, and a five. Well, maybe Parker Fox is good enough. So yeah, maybe Parker they can play Fox, Jameson Battle at the four, Parker Fox at the five, and they only need a one, two, and a five. And then a bench.
Isaiah Enan.
Yeah, I wouldn't be hitching my wagon to Isaiah Enan. Anyway, North Carolina. Thoughts, Brad, on the Tar Heels? I think they're pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, that was a crazy game, too. That was an all-time melt. I mean, you can say refs all you want, but the bottom line is good.
Can we discuss point the pass lead. By Leaky Black?
That was...
I have never been more dumbfounded watching a basketball play in my life. Like, you just...
That was very
like,
funny.
I watched, like, what are you doing? Like, I had to, like, blink to make sure I wasn't, like, seeing it wrong. I was like, did he really just do that?
Bacot was open.
Yeah, but there was no chance the ball was ever getting to him.
That was a rocket of an alley-oop pass. But, yeah. Baylor just too many injuries, you know. Really could use Cryer, really could use Chamba Chachua. Kendall Brown's draft stock is tanking. I saw today ESPN had him late first now. When like a couple weeks ago he was like a lottery pick. Because he can't shoot. But yeah, UNC played a great game. It's weird how they're so tough on the glass when like Brady Manek's not thought of as a glass cleaner, right? It's basically all Bacot. I mean, he's really dominant inside, and their guard play has come around. And, you know, these guys were all super talented. I had them sixth in the preseason for a reason, and they're starting to gel. Shooting's there. Playmaking's there. Size is there. UNC-UCLA is going to be a really intriguing matchup.
Oh, yeah. I love that game. I think UCLA wins. I do, but... I mean, I wouldn't be surprised either way.
I mean, this is really shaping up for Purdue to make a Final Four. That's another thing. Everyone was so down on the Big Ten, but they still have two teams in it, and one of them is playing St. Peter's.
I mean, I personally believe that my choice is UCLA.
For that region.
Yes.
But look, I mean, any of them other than St. Peter's could win, and I wouldn't be at all surprised.
But, like, there's a legitimate scenario where the Big Ten has more Elite Eight teams than the Big 12. Obviously, the SEC, which is going to have zero, probably, and the ACC. Mm. True. It's just gonna look really silly about all this Big Ten talk if like Purdue wins it all. Yeah. Anyway,
well, I don't think they will. So, next up we have Providence. I rank Providence 11th among the 16 Sweet 16 teams. Doesn't mean that they have the worst path, but I think if you like head to head them, I think they're worse than Arkansas. I think they're worse than Houston. I think they're worse than UCLA. Like, yeah, I don't know if you would fight me on that, Brad, but
you're just a hater. That's okay.
I'm nicer to Providence than most people.
The haters are dropping like flies. They're like still trying to cling to life. But one more win is going to knock all the haters out.
If they beat Kansas, everyone is going to have to like bow down.
Begrudgingly say, okay, whatever. But
anyway, Providence gets through the first weekend pretty well, pretty smoothly. We mentioned it kind of at the top with South Dakota State. And then Richmond executed really well. I thought the matchups were good for them, certainly. But... you win the games in front of you and sets up a game against Kansas that I think is, again, like, could you have asked for a better matchup? No. I mean, like, Arizona would probably kick the crap out of Providence. Like, no offense, Brad. I think you probably agree with that. Like, the matchup.
Well, you know, in my bracket, I was planning on doing, okay, Providence will just lose to either Gonzaga, Arizona, or Kentucky. And they were in the pod with none of the three. So I said, Final Four, let's do it. But yeah, they—I mean, Kansas struggled with Creighton without Kalkbrenner. It's kind of stunning.
Yeah, I mean, they did an unbelievable job, I will say.
Creighton was like that one turnover that led to a run out. Like, if they could have scored there, the screws would be really tightened. Arthur Kaluma is going to be on everyone's breakout list. Trey Alexander should be as well.
Kaluma is unbelievable.
Yeah. Creighton's like one transfer they need. They need one, like, wing shot maker. And then they need, like, their yearly grad transfer five-man and backup Kalkbrenner. I mean, I was so worried.
They
never
developed the backup center. They just always, like, randomly in June pick up Keyshawn Fizel or Kelvin Jones or whoever the hell.
Kalkbrenner was the backup last year behind Bishop. Imagine if Christian Bishop was on this team. Creighton would be much worse because Kalkbrenner couldn't flourish. But, yeah, I was worried for Creighton's prospect next year when Kalkbrenner went down. But, thankfully, he's only out a few months to send the broadcast, no surgery. So, yeah, just get their newest iteration of Kelvin Jones, get a shot-making wing. I think the dream would be Pat Baldwin if he ever went to the portal. That'd be perfect. And then people forget they got Mason Miller, who redshirted this year, the top 75 recruit. Another year of Roddy, another year of Sharif Mitchell if he's healthy. And we got a deep Creighton team here. But anyway.
Providence.
Shot making was very good. Croswell was incredible both games. The analytic they use backed that up as well. But Croswell was just all over the glass, super energetic. Durham looks healthy. Knock on wood.
Let me frame it to you this way, Brad. For Providence to beat Kansas, what needs to happen?
I mean, I don't think anything crazy, right? The two ways to beat Providence. An athletic shot blocker who's going to take Watson out of his jump hooks and whatnot. Creighton doesn't have that. Or spread you out and put Watson in pick and roll. They don't – I mean, they could do that, but it's not as dynamic as what Villanova's doing, right? I mean, they're going to start DeJuan Harris, and you can – play off him. They'll put in Remy Martin, but they're also going to have either McCormick or Lightfoot or KJ Adams out there. So Watson shouldn't be too much of a liability. And you can put Manaya on Agbaji or Wilson or Brown, whoever you want. Plenty of guys that he can guard, and they're not super athletic in the front court, you know. So.
No, it's a great matchup.
Providence couldn't have asked for a better matchup. Like I don't think Providence would have beaten Baylor, Gonzaga, or Arizona, or Kentucky, but they get, I think, the one team that they have a chance against.
Yeah. I agree with that. All right, let's move on to Arkansas, which got two real wars from mid-majors. I mean, Providence was somewhat in cruise control against both. I know South Dakota State made a push at one point, but for the most part, Providence cruised. Arkansas didn't. Arkansas got punched in the mouth by Vermont. They played a grinder of a grinder against New Mexico State, but here they are back in the Sweet 16 for the second time in a row. They had not gone at all since 1996 under Nolan Richardson before Musk got there, so that's quite the impressive thing. Their defense is really good. I mean, their offense is up and down and frustrating at times, but they really guard you. And look, I mean, can they pull the upset? I guess we'll see.
I did not watch much of the New Mexico State game. I don't remember what other game was on that I was glued to. I don't remember. Oh, maybe UCLA St. Mary's. Was that at the same time? I don't remember, but I didn't watch much of that game.
Murray State St. Peter's was also around that time. So
that was probably that one, but I mean, I'm still stunned that UConn blew it against New Mexico State. And then I was also stunned that Vermont kept it so close against Arkansas. I mean, I was sitting over here up in the ivory tower saying, Vermont doesn't have a chance. They only have two good players. The rest of the players are good for the America East, but they're getting exposed. Supporting cast stinks. And that didn't really bear out. You know, they were right in it until the end, basically.
Yep.
And with how the Zags looked on Saturday, I don't think many people are going to give Arkansas a chance in this one. I don't necessarily blame them.
You know, I think that the game plan will be really good, right? I mean, I've mentioned this a lot, but the game plan that they had last year when they played against Baylor to deal with that team was better than anyone else had. And you're going to give them a full week to prepare. Like, I think that they'll be ready. They'll have, you know, they'll have plans on how they want to guard Chet and Timmy. I think they'll go right at, you know, with Chet, they'll go right at him with, you know, Tony or Umude or one of those guys. They'll just say, like, go like attack him off the bounce and try to get him in foul trouble, because you know, he struggles with that, you know, because of the fact that he can get bullied around. I thought he handled the Memphis game relatively well. I didn't think he played poorly. I didn't think he played that well. I thought he was just kind of there. Partially because of the foul trouble. I know there's going to be a lot of people who tweet that highlight where Durin like plowed him over, like completely just like blew into the ground and be like, oh yeah, this is why Chet can never work. Like whatever, Chet's good. But no, I think Arkansas will go at him. I think they'll be physical and they'll hope that JD Notte can shoot him into the game. So we shall see. Not necessarily optimistic, but I think it'll be a close game at least.
Who's next?
Houston. I picked ninth. People disagreed with me.
I mean, I was as big of a Houston hater as anybody was. Well, that their talent level wasn't very good. Look,
they beat an Illinois team that played a whole lot of RJ Melendez and Luke Goody. So.
Well, I think that was because the right
they realized
play.
They couldn't trust Curbelo.
And Williams wasn't hitting shots. Hawkins was not hitting shots. Was not playing well. So they put in Goody. He immediately hit a couple threes, and then because he was playing the four, he got manhandled on one play by Fabian White. But I think White's better than I gave him credit for.
How about this for you? Just before we move on to into the Houston team. Someone tweeted earlier today. They appear to be like an Illinois fan. They work for 24/7. They tweeted the video of Melendez getting the technical and tweeted, freshman year Jaden Ivey per 40 minutes. 23 games, 18.4 points, 5.5 rebounds, 3.1 assists. Freshman year RJ Melendez per 40 minutes. 22 games, 18.0 points, 7.9 rebounds, 3.2 assists. The logic is indisputable. RJ Melendez is better than Jaden Ivey.
If only he could get into every game, then we could really be cooking with gas then. But
that was very funny. Anyway, Houston, yes.
Yeah, so I don't think I gave Fabian White enough credit.
They're tough as shit. Like,
and it's gonna be tough because I think that they are. Certainly more legit than I gave them credit for, but they're going up against a buzzsaw in Arizona that just saw their tournament life flash before their eyes. I think that's probably the game of the Sweet 16.
Yes. Well, I think so. So I will say this. The way that Houston will kind of overplay certain things and gamble and double team, like there will be nothing about this game that's comfortable for Arizona, right? Like, I don't know that they have the shot making or the juice to win it, but like, this game is not going to be fun because Houston is just going to like send bodies. They're going to, you know, beat the shit out of Mathurin. Like they're going to be so physical with him.
I mean, Houston's bigger than TCU, and TCU dominated the last night.
Right. And it's an effort thing as much as anything with them. So, you know, I think that's kind of the way that I view this game playing out is it'll be kind of like the TCU game. I don't know that they have a Mike Miles, but I also think that they're better coached and a little bit more overall talent and a little more athletic and, you know, so we'll see. I think it'll be a whale of a ball game.
Who is next?
I have Purdue as my number 18. We mentioned that we think the matchup will be pretty good for them against St. Peter's, the Peacocks. But I thought that Jaden Ivey was really, really locked in against Texas. Like, that was so important for me to see. Like a different gear for Jaden. And I thought we saw that. They certainly have all the upside in the world. Can they defend? I mean, I didn't think they defended that well against Texas. Like,
I mean, Texas was forced into a lot of pull-ups.
It's true.
A lot of tough jumpers. But Texas's roster isn't really built to get easy baskets.
Right. They take a lot of tough jumpers when it's not. Like, it was still a 1.03 point per possession day for Texas, which is not bad. It did require 10 threes, but, you know. Look, when Purdue gets downhill and gets Eric Hunter and Jaden Ivey to the basket and then lets Stefanovic hit shots and then they feed up with Edie and Travion, like, they're going to be tough to beat. I think they're going to be fine. You know, again, they didn't really get tested in the first round with Yale. They kind of cruise controlled through that one, unsurprisingly. You know, we'll see. Like, my head says UCLA, but, like, I would not be at all surprised if this team gets its way to the Final Four.
Yeah, I mean, whether it's UNC or UCLA, I mean, that's not a cakewalk, but it's, you're probably going to be favored in that game. So, that's probably the easiest elite game. Or, no, I think Kansas or Providence getting to play. Well, I would say in Miami, I have such distinct styles that could be an issue. But,
yeah.
But bottom line, it's very tough to advance in the NCAA tournament. The kind of the one thing on Purdue, their role players seemed a little more engaged too. Like Ethan Morton hit a big shot.
I believe his name is actually North Dakota Mathias.
Is he from North Dakota?
No, just a bit.
No. Well, I thought Hunter looked better too than I'd seen him previously.
Yep, agree. So number seven on our list is UCLA. So this is a good transition. But what's your side note?
Is Edie coming back
for school next year?
Yeah.
Well, so Jeremy Wu has him as a top 60 pick in his mock draft, which I was like floored by. I was like, you got to be kidding me! Like someone's drafting Zach Edie, he can like barely move. Yeah, you know, like he's kind of Boban-y. Like I would draft Edie over Kofi, is what he said. I said, yeah, well. I don't know that I disagree with that logic, so I guess we'll see. I assumed he's coming back, but maybe I'm wrong.
Yeah.
If not, they're going to have to play that Swedish fellow coming in.
William Berg.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, Will Berg.
And they have,
it sounds like a guy working an office job.
They have Trey Kaufman, who I think was a top 50 recruit, was redshirting this year. I
mean, yes, Trey Kaufman Wren.
Then they have first. They'll be fine. They might not be great next year, but
they'll find another 7 foot five guy.
Yeah. They'll be good.
Level up. Get like a 7 foot eight guy.
Yeah.
Get Mamadou Enjai's brother. All right. Next up, UCLA. I had like completely written off Akron like the whole way. Like I just like, assumed that there was no chance like leading up by it. And they hung in. Like they were right there. But then UCLA tanked St. Mary's. I'm going to be honest. I didn't watch a single second of UCLA in the first two rounds because they were both like playing during my sights. But
I watched some Akron, less St. Mary's, I think, because I was just still kind of getting over the end of the Providence game. No, but yeah, Akron was a 13 seed that I was praying for. I was about to text you that. What if I told you in October that UCLA would be struggling in the first round of the NCAA tournament against a Xavier Castaneda, Brian Trimble backcourt, but Brian Trimble was out. I was confused because they have a guy.
Did you see that Brian Trimble's in the
portal? I did. They have a guy named Tribble on their team.
Yeah, Greg Tribble and Brian Trimble. It's unbelievable.
So I was all confused. But
Xavier Castaneda. You see him like, take played a 2-point shot, and you were like, that can't be Brian Trimble.
Yeah. He doesn't look as stocky as I remember.
He doesn't look chubby. What do we do?
Yeah, Brian Trimble had a really unique look.
Oh, man, did he ever.
No, but Castaneda played really well, which is kind of because he stunk for South Florida. But,
oh, my gosh.
But
well, John, you're the resident South coach. Florida guy on this podcast. You love South Florida.
Unfortunately, I didn't catch South Florida game all year.
It was so high on your list of things you were most excited for this season that you just didn't. You didn't even watch a single game. You just like checked the box score a couple of times. Like, yeah. Jameer Chaplin is playing a lot of minutes.
No, my depth chart right now that I'm looking at is the same one I had in the preseason. Yeah, so I have no idea if this is right or not.
Anyway, UCLA. Look, bottom line to me is like Hawkins has played really well. He's had 15 or more in 8 straight games. And when you have Jaquez playing at a high level, Juzang hanging at a high level, and Tiger Campbell playing at a high level, combined with Riley and Miles Johnson, that's a team that can go to the Final Four. So give me UCLA to win against Carolina and win against Purdue. And go to New Orleans and play Gonzaga, which would be quite the thing. That'd be great for the television ratings, even though Gonzaga would probably house them.
A rematch of last year.
Oh, the ratings would be through the roof.
I mean, we're sitting on pretty good ratings for every matchup here except for Miami. And
or if Providence was in the Final Four.
No. Providence, Kansas is going to have ratings.
Yes, but if Providence were in the Final Four, it would get no ratings.
Yeah.
Sorry, I hate to bring it to you.
I saw the Marquette blog, I believe it's called Paint Touches, put out like the ratings for all the Fox games and the ratings for all the FS or for the top FS1 games. There was some caveat, but Providence was, I think, like fourth or fifth in rating. Villanova, UConn, I think Georgetown, St. John's were the top, if I remember correctly. St. John's surprised me. I think that there was one where they were on right after a football game or something. I don't know. But anyway, yeah, Providence isn't strong in the race.
Anyway, next up, I have Texas Tech as the number 6 team left in the field. I was surprised by what Notre Dame was able to do to them. And kind of cut and screen and make shots and just hang around. Like, that was surprising to me. But this team is gritty, man. Like, I've seen a lot of people picking them to beat Duke. I'm not sure I'm quite there. But, like, I really like them. Like, I have all year. I felt like they could win a championship. You know, they clearly don't have a guy to, like, go to late in games. Like, Taron Shannon stinks. But, like, look, they're fun. And, you know, they're probably the more vulnerable of the two against Gonzaga just because they don't score. But, you know, regardless of what happens, second weekend this year and doing what they did was a tremendous success for Mark Adams.
Absolutely. I mean, this is going to be a very intriguing game against Duke. Going to be a lot of athleticism on the court, a lot of positional size. Texas Tech doesn't have the height of Mark Williams or even Paolo, but between Santos Silva, Bryson Williams, and O'Banner, that's a lot of aggressiveness around the rim, a lot of physicality. But yeah, Texas Tech's going to have to get better shots.
Yes. I mean, but the interesting thing is, like, Texas Tech forces you to take so many perimeter jump shots. They, like, plays really well against Duke, right? Like Paolo Banchero taking a bunch of pull-ups. Like, you live with that.
Yeah. Duke doesn't have the best jump shooters. And I saw, I believe Jared Burson tweeted this today, that Texas Tech has forced the lowest amount of paint points. I think, like, 10 different – for, like, 10 different opponents. Like, just – I don't remember if this was one of the examples, but say – Texas had their lowest points in the paint game against Texas Tech all season. Like, Texas Tech did that to, I think, like 10 different teams or something. So.
Yes. They're tough as hell to play against. They really are. Like, if you beat Texas Tech, it's not going to have been fun, right? Like, you're not gonna come out of that game and be like, oh man, you know, we played a pretty basketball game.
There's a lot of fouls, a lot of bodies on the floor.
Oh my goodness.
A lot of free throws, a lot of whining Texas Tech fans.
Oh, guarantee that Duke is going to take like 25 free throws fully deservingly, and like Texas Tech fans are going to be convinced it's like a conspiracy theory. It'd be great.
But like, people were mad at Purdue taking 40 free throws yesterday. But like, Texas Tech is a jump shooting, or sorry, Texas is a jump shooting team.
And then Purdue's got the
biggest dude on the planet that just backs people down. You can't stop him unless you foul him.
Yeah. So anyway, on to Duke. We kind of started alluding them already. Michigan State gave him a real push. And
that was a great game.
The defensive issues for Duke were not overly confidence building. They gave up 1.2 points per possession. I don't know what to believe. I really don't.
Like, I have zero feel for this Duke team. They could win a national championship. It wouldn't stun me.
I think if we didn't know that Duke's defense was so poor down the stretch, I think we would frame that Michigan State game as, oh, it was a terrific game. Michigan State has had terrific shot making, and Duke just played better and won. But
teams are because producing good shot making games against Duke all the time. You know,
exactly.
It's like all these point guards having great games against Purdue. It's like at some point, you know, Rob Finney ain't that good. AJ Hogard ain't that good. These guys are balling out against Purdue because it's Purdue.
Exactly. Texas Tech doesn't really have point guard. You know, you'd say Neldoni off the bench. I'm not even sure if he's playing a lot anymore now that everyone's back. But I mean, Texas Tech's not really going to beat you a ton off the dribble, you wouldn't think. I don't think that Duke's defense is going to be as exposed against a team like Texas Tech that's going to play with a bunch of kind of long, versatile wings as opposed to a team that had maybe a little quicker guard play.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. Let's move on to number four, Kansas. Ugly Kansas against toast. Creighton, like we said.
Kansas toast.
This is a Providence podcast.
I pushed back on you all year when you were like, this Kansas team is not that talented. Like, but they have Agbaji and they have Braun. But watching that Creighton game and just looking how like Providence matches up, I mean, I'm not scared at all. You know.
There's nothing about Kansas that like frightens you.
The one thing is like a Remy Martin resurgence would be a little scary.
He was very good against Creighton, but
that's because Hawkins was guarding him. I don't know what
they basically were like, we're not changing the game plan. Whenever Remy comes in, like we're just gonna like let him do whatever he wants and like hope he shoots us out. Who shoots them out of it? And he didn't.
And he hits the first three, and McDermott goes to Hawkins, like, get up on him, get up on him. But then I was watching the game, and Hawkins didn't really feel the need to get up on him. And I don't think if, like, Nate Watson's on him on a switch, I don't think Nate Watson's going to really want to get up on him either. But.
Agree. Look, they have good players. They're well coached. They have no juice. They're very boring.
So last Saturday.
I have just not been able to see Kansas win the national championship like all this whole go. And now it's like the path is so there for them to like play Villanova for a spot in the national title. It's like, eh. You know.
I mean, Jesse Newell's tweeting out potential Kansas, Miami and Kansas, Iowa State spreads. Providence is getting no respect.
Yeah, put it on the bulletin boards. Put it on the bulletin boards.
Last Saturday, right? Conference tournament championship Saturday. I'm having lunch with my parents, right? And at the restaurant, they have ESPN on. They flash a commercial, like, coming up later tonight, Kansas, Texas Tech, and they show Jalen Wilson on a fast break dunking the ball. And my dad goes, you know, these Big 12 teams are just so much better than, like, Providence. And I was like, how many Big 12 games have you watched? I just saw it right there. So that one clip in the commercial of Jalen Wilson dunking on a fast break. Told my dad all he needed to know.
He's correct. Kansas is going to kick the shit out of Providence, according to Brad's dad. That's all he needs to know. That's the real source.
He went to one Providence game with me, and he just complained the whole time that we couldn't go to a restaurant because we didn't have enough time before the game, and we had to eat at the mall.
Did you get Johnny Rockets?
Yeah. Brad loves Johnny Rockets. He really hates basketball. But anyway. We'll see how much his take stands up.
But. Speaking of underwhelming Big East teams, number three, Villanova. They had a good weekend. Kept Ohio State at arm's length most of the way. But Eric Dixon and Jermaine Samuels are playing really good basketball.
I think the key here is Samuels, who was not good for the whole season. He was battling like back spasms or something. He was terrific in both the Delaware and the Ohio State games. finishing around the rim.
I think they're better than Kansas right now. That's why I ranked them that way. I don't know if people agree with that.
Well, I mean, all year they were seen as underwhelming because they got their ass kicked against Baylor. But that Baylor team literally does not exist anymore with no Cryer or Chama Chachua. So they played UCLA and Purdue tough and just kind of lost close ones. But Caleb Daniels has rounded into form, and after having COVID late last season, taking great minutes at Eric Dixon. I just wish he would shoot the ball more. He's turned down open looks. I mean, Slater didn't play well against Iowa State, and they still won comfortably. So, I mean, this is a really talented team that can hit shots, and they're doing a better job getting easy shots than they did earlier in the year.
Yes. You know, I still think they would struggle with an overwhelmingly athletic team. Like Arizona, for instance. Like, I'm curious how that game would play out.
I mean, Arizona is huge, yeah. So. Anything else on the Wildcats of Villanova?
I don't have much. They're good. They're fine. Arizona's number two. They played that TCU game. It was tremendous. I mean, it was a lot of fun. Kirk Creasa came back. Kirk Creasa looked like he was playing with a wooden leg. Didn't make any shots.
He was getting them up, though. He got three on one possession.
Oh, yeah. He was getting them up all right. Which I was, you know, we were joking on Field 68 that was a Terrence Oglesby possession right there. Just keep shooting.
We didn't really talk. Auburn went down in the most Auburn way possible. Like, it was incredible. Like, the shots that Wendell Green and Katie Johnson were taking.
Well, they went down because Javari and Walker Kessler played like shit, though.
There was one possession, though, where they were down, I think, like 8. And Katie Johnson had the ball on the wing and just kind of sized up his defender for like 4 seconds and then just pulled the 3. And the whole time that he has the ball, just stand there, you're like, this shot is going up. You just knew the minute he caught the ball that the shot was going up. And Green and Johnson took some crazy shots, and Smith and Kessler weren't any good. And that was how Auburn went down, but yeah. Back on Arizona.
Arizona. They survived. I mean, look, I think Coloco is unbelievable.
Yeah, I mean, he's super athletic, much better touch, much better offensive presence than in years past when he was just kind of like a stick figure out there. And, you know, how about Sean Miller literally built this team, right? Put these 5 starters together. Now Tommy Lloyd coaching them to a potential national championship. Do you think that played a role in him getting the Xavier job? That, like, yeah.
I think his reputation is kind of cleaned up. Like, I think just like doing a podcast for a year really cleaned up their reputation. I mean, look, all these guys, when they're out of it, it's like, ah, yeah. Well, A, it helps that Will Wade is like seen as so much worse than everyone else now.
Yeah.
It's like, all right, you know, Sean Miller's not as bad as Will Wade. But like, I think it's like, oh, Patino's working. You know, some of the stuff that Schlabaugh said wasn't real. So like, there's like some plausible deniability. And he spent a year doing a podcast with Jeff Goodman. Like, that seems chill. Like, he just seemed like he was a normal guy, you know?
I mean, how has nobody hired Patino? We're just, like, picking every mid-major coach that, like, we can think of. We're not going to pick the best one. Somebody give the man a contract.
Well, I thought maybe South Carolina was going to swing a little bit once they missed on Sean. But it appears Lamont Paris is there. Let's wrap up with Gonzaga before we move on. To the coaching carousel. We do have some good stuff to get to. Gonzaga struggled with Memphis. How much of that do you think was Memphis, Brad? How much of it was Gonzaga in your mind?
I think it was Memphis. I mean, they were playing great. Alex Lomax was playing great.
It's unbelievable Tyler how Harris much mileage great. They've gotten out of – they got this year out of Lomax and Harris.
And
I mean, Tyler Harris is a bad get. We labeled him as a bad get. We were wrong.
Apologies. I didn't label him as a bad get. Well, I've been begging teams to just grab a backup point guard from the portal.
Oh, yeah, but Tyler Harris.
That's all I want from these teams. Well, he's had some good games when I've been watching.
But. Yeah, but, I mean, everyone thought he stunk. So. Anyway, continue.
Lomax was great. Quiñones was solid. Minot showed some flashes. Durham, I mean, Williams and Durham were good. I mean, it was really a lot of guys were playing well. And, you know, this team had another gear that never even got to hit because they never really got real production from Amani Bates. They never really got
Amani coming back was so ridiculous. Like, that was so upsetting.
I know. Like, what I think that was going to tank their season, but he didn't play poorly.
He didn't, like, touch the ball.
Well, they didn't get real production from Amani. They didn't get real production from Earl Timberlake at all.
I think Earl Timberlake might just stink.
I know. It's kind of dodged a bullet there. If you're Providence, they really want him twice. And then Minot is like this burgeoning star who barely plays. So Memphis had a whole other gear that we never got to see. It's kind of a shame that they ran into Gonzaga, but
they would have beaten anyone else that day.
But like that's what you are when you stink for most of the year and turn it on late. You know, you're like a 9 seed.
The true TV and Tigers.
The bad thing about the 9 seed is you got to play the 1 seed.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's the Sweet 16. We're looking forward to it. The Elite Eight after that, and then a Final Four in New Orleans. I will be in Philadelphia eating a cheesesteak or two, apparently, because I've never done that, and watching St. Peter's. So.
Wait, you've never had a steak and cheese, or you've never had the Philadelphia one?
I've never had a Philly cheesesteak in Philadelphia, like from like Gino's or like one of those spots. I've had steak and cheese before.
I'm a huge steak and cheese guy, but I like the sliced cheese as opposed to the cheese whiz, the liquid cheese.
All righty, let's get into the coaching carousel. Lot to get
first.
To
just here. Busy. Week. Sorry, just one more observation from the first round.
Sure.
Why does Mike Woodson put in his whole second unit at once?
Oh, it's so dumb.
And then in the coaching interview, he's like, we need some more offense. But I don't know, maybe put in Trace Jackson Davis or Xavier Johnson.
Instead of having... I love how everyone felt the need to be like, as soon as they won the first four games, Mike Woodson did an amazing job this year.
Yeah, he did fine.
No, he literally like met... like. If Archie Miller had been the head coach still and had done this, people would have been like, are we sure we shouldn't fire Archie?
No, they would be like, we are sure we should fire Archie right
this because second. We didn't have this good a year. Yeah.
I mean, I had Indiana, I think 25th in the preseason or like 27.
Yeah, me and you were both high on. We both had them like 25. But.
And like, they were fine. I think analytically they were like in that range and they lose in the first round. I mean, that's fine for your first year, Mike Woodson. But if you do this again next year, and your roster's not looking too hot next year, as of right now, Indiana fans are going to start
to... Well, I think Tracy's going to come back.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, then your roster is pretty impressive next year. This whole... We can do the COVID seniors, but we're not going to give you extra scholarships. It's like, doesn't make any sense at all. Like, if Trace Jackson Davis comes back, Indiana has 16 guys. Like, I guess you can just run off.
I mean, like, the back, run off. But yeah, there's a bunch of guys to run off. Is Miller like, Kopp coming back? I feel like that's a thing.
You don't think he is coming back?
I feel like it's definitely a thing that he wants to come back so he can, like, sell more merch. Hang out.
But, like, you figure Lander's definitely gone.
Christian Lander's, like, got
the one lock.
Like, I'm surprised he's not already in the portal.
Yeah, and then. Well, today was the first day that the portal was truly alive. Oh, like, yeah. Every time you check your phone, energy. Someone else in the portal. Felt great.
A lot of energy in the portal.
Like, you figure Lander's gone, Leal's gone, that's two, and you need to drop one
more. You could probably cut Logan Duncan. There's your 13. Tamar Bates wouldn't stun me if he portaled.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll see. But anyway, coaching changes, coaching carousel, the big, I don't know, surprise statement certainly was Florida hiring Todd Gold, right? Because, look, every year there's, like, a guy in the coaching carousel where you're like, they definitely need to move on this year because, like, this is their chance. And Todd Golden was that guy, right? I mean, you build an at-large team, a top 25 KenPom team at San Francisco of all places. You won 24 games. You had an amazing year. But Bouye was a senior. Masalski is a senior. Both those guys couldn't come back. Shabazz could come back, but he's a senior. You know, Tepe is a senior. Like, they, this team next year was not going to be very good. Like, now, you know, would they have hit the portal? Yes, I know of some names that they would have been able to get. Like, they would have not been, they wouldn't have bottomed out, but like, the momentum was now. This was the chance for Todd to move up, and you know, all the Pac-12 jobs didn't move, and you're like, oh shit, like, is he gonna get one? Like, I know he has these SEC ties, but like, is he really a fit at Mississippi State? Is he really a fit at Missouri? No. And then there's Florida, and you kind of like, I can see this fit because he's like Mike White with a, you know, he's Mike White with a KenPom password, you know, like he looks like a Mike White, like he looks like a frat boy, you know, kind of younger guy, energized white dude, you know, kind of like born to coach type of deal. Look, I believe in Todd. I think he can be tremendous. It's a gamble, but I think he's a good hire for Florida. I think he checks a lot of boxes. I think he's going to recruit. I think he's going to hire a killer staff, and they'll be fine. I know there's been some hate, but I think Todd is a good hire there.
I mean, the whole SEC just said, we want all the mid-major coaches. Just give us every one from the tournament this year.
And so then, I tweeted this. Like, I tweeted this earlier. The biggest jobs that have been filled, right? Louisville, Maryland, and Florida. They hired one career assistant, one guy who's never won in the NCAA tournament, and one guy who is 23 and 22 all time at the WCC. Like, why is it that these, like, you know, elite jobs aren't getting, you know, better names? And I think the truth to the matter is, quite frankly, like, all the guys that, like, the truly, like, great coaches out there seem to be happy to stay at their current, like, mediocre jobs, like, in theory, right? And I don't know if mediocre is a fair word or whatever, but, like, look, Mark Few is at Gonzaga. He's not leaving Gonzaga. Gonzaga is not a top 10 job in the country without Mark Few. Houston is not a top 10 job. Kelvin Sampson is as elite as they come. Baylor is not a top 20 job. Scott Drew is not moving from Baylor anytime soon, right? Like, you're going through, okay, who else is there out there that is tremendous?
Well, because, like,
Bruce Pearl at Auburn, not going anywhere, does a great job, right?
Well, like, I mean, if Providence can pay Cooley $3.5 million without football money, then guys like Scott Drew at schools with football can make as much money at, you know, like, Scott Drew making, I have no idea what he makes, but let's say if Providence can pay Cooley $3.5 million, Baylor can pay Scott Drew $5 million, you would think. So Scott Drew making $5 million a year at a place that he won the national championship, like, why would he leave, you know?
No, I mean, that's part of it for sure, but also some guys want those jobs, right? Like, and it just really doesn't not. Feel like any of those guys are interested.
Yeah.
So I don't know what that is, but if you're looking for, like, why can't Florida pull a big name? Why can't Louisville? It's like, because you go through those names. Those are the big names. You know, Nate Oates, Alabama, you know, Eric Musselman, Arkansas, you know, Bruce Pearl, Scott Drew, like, all these guys, like, they're at jobs that are worse jobs than Louisville. They're at worse jobs than Florida, but those guys have no interest. Like, those guys aren't trying to jump to those jobs. So, you know, I think that's where we're at. So that means you're hiring Todd Golden. You're rolling the dice. Do you like this hire, Brad?
It was very surprising, especially with the speed. I was thinking maybe he would go to Mississippi State, maybe he'd go to Missouri. But it seemed like Florida opened, and immediately it was Golden. Golden lost, like, the night before. And I had texted you because I had no idea who Florida was going to get to be their coach. Thought maybe a parachute could, you know, maybe like a Chris Holtman parachute or something. But I think it's a fine hire. I mean, he built a really good team at San Francisco. That's got to count for something. I also think
Todd, Todd is one of those guys, like, it's, you know, it's kind of like those Drew Valentine, like the Nico Medved, those guys where you, like, you talk to them and you're like, shit, like, this guy has it. Like, whatever it is, he has.
Like, they could go right on Kevin Sweeney's rising star coaching list.
I believe so. Yeah.
But the cupboard right now at Florida is not bare at all. So we'll see if all these guys stick around. But, you know, this is probably not the right way to categorize a job. But the way I think of a job or a program is, if a recruit is down to Providence and School X, how worried am I? And if they're down to Providence, Florida, I'm shitting my pants. You know, that feels like a good job. I'm certainly not scared at all if it's between Providence and Missouri or Providence and South Carolina or Mississippi State. But.
Well, let's get to Missouri and South Carolina and Mississippi State because all of those made hires as well. Missouri gets Dennis Gates. Dennis Gates has been like literally every job for 2 years. Dennis Gates. Because, you know, he's been in the ACC with Leonard Hamilton. He's, I don't know how to put this, gotten shit done for Leonard Hamilton, which makes him a good candidate for SEC jobs. He's been in the Midwest because he's a Chicago guy and been at Cleveland State, so he can fit at the Big Ten job. He can fit at the Big East jobs in the Midwest, so DePaul and Marquette and Xavier.
Georgetown fans want them.
You pretty much can peg Dennis Gates for any job. Well, Dennis finally gets Mizzou. Look, I am not like a, oh my gosh, enamored Dennis Gates guy. I think he's good, right? He obviously has built two championship-level teams at Cleveland State, which is not easy. He inherited a really difficult situation and flipped it quick. You know, but he also never topped 165 in KenPom. Like, when you're in a market that had Matt McMahon, that had, you know, who's built two top 50 teams, when you've got Todd Golden, who built a top 25 KenPom team, when you've got, you know, Chris Jans, who's building top 75 to 100 teams and winning NCAA tournament games, and Grant McCasland, you know, and Jerome Tang, Jeff Linder, Nico Medved. Like, you go through, it's like these guys have built some elite teams. You know, Dennis never really has. I think Dennis is a good program builder. I think he's a good marketer, brings good energy. He really good coaches, good defense. They play hard. They're athletic. They recruit. Like, I don't know that he will be a bust at Mizzou. Like, I don't think they'll be 8-24, but I don't know that he will ever. I don't know that he'll surpass Kwanzo.
I mean, I was surprised that Kwanzo even got fired because it felt like everything was moving so slow. Like, Mike Anderson's going to stay. LaValle hasn't been fired yet. Hopkins is staying. Haas is staying. And all of a sudden, the SEC was like, nope, we are clearing.
We're moving.
We're clearing the deck.
Moving, baby. Yeah.
And, so, you know, I think it's a fine hire, but yeah, it doesn't really – like, kind of similar to my thoughts on Kevin Miller to Maryland. It's like, why do we think – he's better than what we had before again? Like, I guess we can hope, but like, are we really sure that Kevin Willard is not going to go to one sweet 16 and a bunch of round of 32s and Maryland fans are going to be like, hey, what's going on? And like, are we sure that Dennis Gates isn't going to do 5 years, two NCAA tournaments?
I think Dennis will be a much more energized recruiter. That'll be the biggest thing.
I mean, Kwanzo used to be, and Kwanzo was like, this is a pain in the neck. I'm not doing this anymore.
Yeah, he stopped working. Mississippi State, I thought, got the exact right type of hire. Right? That is a gritty job. That is a place where you got to navigate the trenches. You got to be ready to work, get down and dirty, and you got to be able to build things and find players in unique spots. And I thought that getting Chris Jans, a guy who's done that at a place like New Mexico State, a guy who's been with Greg Marshall, a guy who's won JUCO national championships, if I recall correctly. Like, to me, it just kind of checks a lot of the boxes, right? Like, I don't think it's a very good job, but I think among the coaches who've been hired in the SEC, I thought the best fit was Chris Jans at Mississippi State.
I think the one knock on him would be the same with Matt McMahon, and it's, you know, everyone wins in New Mexico State. Everyone wins in Murray State. When you compare that to Todd Golden, not everyone wins in San Francisco. In fact, no one really does.
No one does, yeah.
You know, Jeff Linder, no one really wins at Wyoming. You know, there are other jobs where coaches are doing stuff that's more unprecedented. Whereas Marvin Menzies won at New Mexico State and then flamed out. Paul Weir won at New Mexico State and then really flamed out. And then we'll see how Jans can do.
And then on Matt McMahon, who gets LSU today, this kind of seemed like it was trending towards this. I like Matt McMahon a lot. Like, there seemed to be a lot of – I saw a lot of, like, dialogue today from people in the industry, people I respect, who are kind of like, yeah, you know, does Matt McMahon have enough juice to see, you know, can he go into the crowd with the big boys and hang. I will say this, that dude is intense as hell. Like watching him run a practice, watching him kind of like he's intense as shit. I think he's a good ball coach. He's built I think the thing that stands out to me is like he's built multiple excellent teams that weren't just like, it wasn't just like, oh, I had Ja, I won, I moved on. Like he built it with Ja, won 28 games, won an NCAA tournament game, kind of rebuilt it, and then went 31-3 with Tevin Brown and Juice Hill and KJ Williams and Trey Hannibal. Like to me, that's very impressive. So I give him the benefit of the doubt. I think he's going to have to hire a big staff. You know, I've seen people kind of feeling, oh, you know, he could just bring along Tim Kaine and Casey Long. Like, I think he's going to have to get down and get, like, he's going to have to make a $1 million staff hire. He's going to have to go and pay $800,000 to get, you know, a David Patrick
or Jonas Hayes is out there.
Jonas Hayes, who I think is going to go to Georgia with Mike White. Like they're, and look, him and Todd are in very similar spots. Like, Todd Golden needs to go get, like, again, I'm just kind of rattling through names here, but like David Patrick stands out, right? He was at Arkansas, he was at LSU, he was at this past season at Oklahoma. Like, you need to go out and pull out a $900,000 check and say, David Patrick, come work for me, right? If you're Matt McMahon, you need to come out and you need to find, you know, I don't know who it is, right? Is it, you know, Chris Crutchfield just got a job, so maybe it's not Chris Crutchfield, but is it KT Turner? Is it Gurek Malagi? Like he needs to go get a dude to get him some players. He probably needs two of them. But I think he's a good enough ball coach that can work. And then the last SEC job, unless I'm mistaken, that has filled in the last week, South Carolina, which appeared to want Matt McMahon, appeared to want Sean Miller, wound up apparently being between BJ McKee, who's on staff at Wake Forest, and then Lamont Paris, who I don't mind. You know, Lamont Paris eventually gets the job. Obviously built a very good team. Not sure how much I like it because, like I said earlier, I kind of like the guys who built multiple good teams, but the upward trajectory is there. You know, 3-15 to 7-11 to 10-8. To 9-7 to 14-4. I mean, he built the program. They got better every year. He built an excellent team. He's been at high major assist as an assistant. He's recruited the portal. Like, it just seems like a very like, sure, why not? Let's give this a go. Higher, you know.
Yeah, I thought it was fine, but I mean, I was not expecting him to get a job this year. I thought maybe next year. Because as you said, the success was so sudden this year, but I guess the one guy, so our Mountain West friends, Linder and Medved, are kind of left without a chair here.
Because there was no movement. Like, Nico would have been a great fit. I mean, so first off, the only high major Nico's ever been at, the only high majors that he was kind of plugged into were Minnesota and Nebraska. And Nebraska didn't open, and Minnesota just opened last cycle, and he didn't get it because we've talked about this on the podcast, kind of what. Minute that I was looking for in Canada.
Did we talk about how Fred Hoiberg just like gave away a bunch of buyout money? That was ridiculous.
I mean, he wanted to keep his job.
So they were going to fire him if he didn't and pay the enormous buyout?
They were going to try to fire him for cause.
Well, we see how well that worked with Kevin Ollie.
Yes.
Nebraska would have to get their $18 million really quick.
Point being, like, if you go through the jobs for Nico Medved, right? Like, so you think high academics, so Stanford, Northwestern, Notre Dame. You think of Minnesota, obviously, because it's Minnesota. You think, could he go to Pac-12, right? Like, Colorado, you know, whatever. Like, none of those were open. Same deal, you know, with Linder. You know, you thought maybe Kansas State. But for the most part, again, Oregon State didn't open. Washington didn't open, right? Like, you just go through it. Like, the jobs weren't there for those guys. So we'll see next year. You're like, again, I think Nico Medved would be an amazing candidate for Northwestern next spring if they open. Would be a gangbusters hire if they can get it done. We'll see what happens. So what was I going to say?
And then we Grant McCaslin.
Yeah, Grant McCaslin's still out there.
Maybe SMU. I think coaching changes said maybe SMU.
Tim Jankovic. So Tim Jankovic's contract is up. And they didn't dance. So, like, what are we doing here? I mean, I don't know how huge a jump North Texas is to SMU. I mean, the money's better.
Exactly. But
the conference is actually going to be like pretty. They're going to be the same conference, so.
Yeah.
You know, we'll see. I will say this: it would open up the spot for Ross Hodge. Ross Hodge is the top assistant there. He does a tremendous job. He's going to be a head coach. I think Grant could almost be like, all right, I get a better job, I get a pay raise, I like don't even have to like change houses, and Ross gets a job and we move on. But it would be a bit of a kick in the teeth to lose him to SMU.
It's tough because like Eric Conkle went from Louisiana Tech to Tulsa, and I'm like, I have no idea who's in what conference of the American Conference Tulsa's USA. So Tulsa's
staying American. Louisiana Tech is staying Conference USA. Conference USA is not in great shape. Eric Conkle was also making like $400,000 before his last extension. My guess is he's probably at like five. He's probably like 550 or six, but he still wasn't making that good money. Frank Case is making 1.4. They're not going to come in at 1.4 for Conkle. My guess is he comes in at a million, but like there's still like a significant financial component there, which I think so, it's a good hire, right?
Rather have Conkle over Mike Anderson?
Not particularly, maybe. But
toss up.
We should hit Maryland quickly. Kevin Willard kind of handled this very poorly, but I mean, I still think from the beginning, like it's a good hire, right? Like I get that this year didn't like go great, but like Kevin Willard built a consistent NCAA tournament team at a place that is not easy to do that. And there's no reason that particularly with, you know, the resources that Maryland has with, you know, the ability to hire a great staff. It sounds like they're going to have Tony Skin on staff. It sounds like they could have David Cox on staff. Like they're going to get players in the DMV. They're going to develop players. Cause I will say the one thing that Kevin Willard has done a tremendous job with Seton Hall is developing players. And I think they're going to have a good program. Like I truly do believe that this will work out. Like, I don't know that it'll work out well enough. Right. I don't see a scenario in which Kevin Willard stinks. That's my view. Right. No. Like maybe it's not enough, but I don't think he'll stink.
But he's getting paid. Getting paid, I think it was 7 years at $3.9 million a year. That is a ton of money. And, you know, Willard, if Aiken didn't get Eric this year, they would probably be like a 4 or 5 seed. The year that COVID canceled the tournament, they were going to be like a 2 or 3 seed. So he has built some good teams, but so did Mark Turgeon. I mean, this is just... you can copy and paste my thoughts on Mike Woodson to Indiana and just paste them here for Maryland and Willard, right?
Fair enough.
Probably be fine. They'll make some tournaments, but at the end of the day, it's not going to meet expectations.
Fair enough. Should we talk about Shaheen Holloway getting Seton Hall? Just like, even though it's...
Yeah, it's very funny.
It's so done. Whatever. I don't know. Like, seems like a good hire. I'm not going to like again... I don't feel the need to like pile on the whole Shaheen thing. Like I just think like he's gonna get enough love. He's done a good job. It's a really, really hard place. Did I watch Shaheen's teams at St. Peter's before this past weekend and say, man, you know, he is gonna be a superstar in this profession. He is gonna be, you know, one of the best. And no, I didn't. So I'm not gonna do that now. But you know. I don't know that you did it. I think they're gonna do fine with him. Like I think he'll build good teams and make NCAA tournaments. Like I think they'll be fine. Xavier, staying in the seat in the Big East. Hire Sean Miller. Do we like that? Do we dislike that?
We love it.
About as good as you could do.
We love it. I mean this.
It also just brings some excitement. Yeah, brings some energy.
I mean, isn't this the best hire of the cycle?
I would be between that and Chris Jans, I think.
It might be between Sean and Archie. I mean, I'm still stunned that Archie at URI.
Is really good. Or URI, I should excuse me.
URI is going to double what they paid David Cox to pay Archie Miller, basically.
They had to. I mean, yeah. UMass was starting around 1.3, 1.4. So.
It's crazy. But
yeah, that's a great hire. Both of them are. The Billers. Again, I'm trying not to just be like, oh yeah, the Millers are great because like both of them have their flaws and like at the end of the day, for both of those schools, like don't know you could do better.
Wait, let's frame it this way for a URI, right? They just hired a coach that like was incredible in this conference and made an Elite Eight at Dayton in this conference, and then was pretty successful at Indiana. Did not meet expectations, but he built tournament teams in Indiana.
He didn't completely stink.
No. And they're getting him after all those experiences. When the last time around that they didn't do an internal hire, they took Dan Hurley from Wagner in the NEC. You know, I mean, this is a slam dunk for a URM.
Yeah, and look, Xavier gets a guy who's already won there. So.
A guy who just built the team that may win the national championship this year.
With NCAA like breathing out his neck. That's the other thing. Like he had like severe recruiting limitations because no American kid wanted to play there in case the tournament got canceled. So he like turned around and recruited Kirk Carissa and as well as Tabalas and Christian Coloco and Ben Matherin. I was like, yeah, here we go. That dude's a baller.
Tyrell Ward has opened up. I assume that the other recruits will follow, but that doesn't really matter. I mean, Sean
thinking in the words of the great Andrew Slater, referring to LSU,
faucets off.
The faucets off. So.
Wait. Oh, hold on. Time out. Travis Steele was paying players?
I mean, I'm not going to say it, but I said what I said.
I
don't know about the current players, but the recruits. I mean.
If you're cheating and you're still losing, you just got to stop cheating, man. Just save your money.
Oh, God. Who else we got? Any other hires? We had the internal deal at San Francisco to promote Chris Gerlifson, which is a good hire.
What's the UMass going to do? Days asleep over there?
I don't know. Well, it really is rather embarrassing that you opened a couple weeks early with the hope of, like, oh, let's beat URI to market. Let's be ready to go. And now it's like the weekend after the first weekend of the tournament, they still don't have a hire.
I mean, it can't be more embarrassing than the first time around when the coach just wouldn't go out.
Showed up. Yeah, no thanks.
I think Pat Kelsey would be
a great fit for UMass right now.
What'd you say?
Pat Kelsey would be a great fit for UMass right now.
Absolutely. He almost made the tournament at College Charleston. No, we have UMass open and we have George Washington open.
And LaSalle.
And LaSalle is open today.
Sounds like maybe Langle at LaSalle.
Oh, that'd be terrific.
I love Langle. Love Langle.
He's talk about like building Chris, multiple teams. Yeah.
Maybe Chris Caputo out of George Washington.
The Miami assistant.
Been about 15 years of naming Chris Caputo for every Northeast Mid-Nature opening without him getting one. So maybe this time's the charm. Some like Washington Post writer mentioned Jimmy Patsos, and I was like, you're an idiot. Don't know anything about college basketball. You're the dumbest person alive, and you're just like chatting on a friend. Sorry.
Talk about failing upwards.
Good God. Be awful. Just hire Lonergan. Like, if you wanted to hire, like, an abusive person, just hire Lonergan, you know? What else is out there?
That's it.
Murray State's open now. Maybe Steve Prohm. You can do internal as well, but I think I would love to see Steve back there. Be bad for my Field of 68 compadres, but I think it'd be good for Steve. And so
there's nothing better than just hiring your old coach.
Oh,
so simple, so straightforward.
You love it. Knows all the people.
To think, is there?
Does University of San Diego still open? It's a good job.
Yeah, I saw tweets.
They were going big fish hunting. They were going big fish hunting. Then they were like, James Jones. And now I've heard an assistant there. So. We'll see.
Get lost with these assistants.
Ooh. Why? Well, this is a good assistant. This is a good guy. It's a good guy. Let's talk about it. It's a friend. So.
Washington's going to run it back with
missing
their starting 1, 2, and 5. So
Northwestern gave the not the vote of confidence, but the this isn't good enough statement. That was exciting. Sounds like there'll be some staff turnover there. You got to think Collins is doing his best to try to get Pat Baldwin Jr., but I don't think that's happening. Sounds like Pat is leaning towards the pros.
There's nothing dumber than when you make the coach change over his staff. Like, this is probably the player's fault.
It's just to justify.
Also could be the head coach's fault, but we're going to blame the assistants.
It's just to justify firing the guy next year. Well, we changed the assistants. It didn't work, so here you go. And instead, Northwestern's now recruiting guys who can't jump over a textbook at Lehigh. So it's great. Programs are going in a great direction, folks. Great direction. Nothing to see here.
Between Ryan Young, Luke Hunger, I mean, the
Matt Nicholson.
The province board was apoplectic that they weren't recruiting Unger because his dad played at PC.
I know people who like Luke Unger. Luke Unger has some fans around the industry.
Like, why wouldn't he just sign up to be a backup for 4 years? Like, well, maybe he doesn't want to do that. And maybe Cooley hasn't even talked to him. We don't know that. But anyway. You guys need what in the portal? You need a athletic four-man?
Another four. Yep, definitely a four.
And then, like, a best player available?
I would say, right, well, that's the problem, right? Is like you can't go into next year and be like, our lineup is
Bowie, Barry, Audige, Barron, and Young.
Barry, Audige, or Barron and Young. Yeah, like you can't.
The best player available and then athletic.
But like the problem is, like, theoretically, you have Roper, who's a wing. You have Casey Simmons, who's a wing. You know, you probably need an athletic big. Not Nick Lynch or whoever the hell his name is, but.
Maybe you'll get Bryce Hopkins. I saw Illinois fans posted a Instagram post that Hopkins was like, I'm tired of not being appreciated.
Well, Illinois's got to get some. Illinois's got a very interesting offseason ahead.
Because I think that their young guys are pretty good.
I think they're good, but I don't think any of them are stars. Like, I don't think you're ever going to build around RJ Melendez or Coleman Hawkins.
They have Jaden Epps.
If Curbelo portals, which it kind of sounds like it's going to happen, and they lose Kofi, which is no lock, right? Kofi could come back, but he also couldn't.
Right, because we said last year there was a lock he was leaving, and he didn't leave.
Right, so let's do the hypothetical where Curbelo goes in the portal and Kofi goes pro. Your roster next year is Coleman Hawkins, RJ Melendez, Luke Goody, Omar Payne,
Jaden Epps,
Brandon Podziemski, Jaden Epps. They have the kid Rogers, the 2022 kid. Jacob Brandison. Like, that's like an NIT team. Like, that's
Dane Dania.
That was so stupid. I love Brad Underwood.
For Dania, it was stupid, yeah.
Well, it was stupid for Illinois, too. Because you already have Omar Payne. You already have... I guess they'll have some turnover, right? Like, maybe, like, Bosman's Verdonk goes back to the Netherlands. Maybe they're expecting that there's going to be a departure from Brandon Lieb, who's there and never plays.
Hutcherson never got healthy?
Never got healthy. Maybe he'll play next year. I don't know, man. Like they're going to have – they need to get, like, two, like, elite portal guys. Like, they need to be able to get, like – like, even, like, two Alfonso Plumbers wouldn't be enough, you know?
I think I'm a little higher on... Well, so what are we talking about, right? Like, I think that they can make the tournament
if their lineup is... If they got two starters in the portal to go with RJ Melendez, Luke Goody, and Omar Payne, is that really enough? Or Coleman Hawkins instead of Luke Goody? Do you really think that's enough?
Yes, I think that
those starters have to be pretty darn good, right? They have to be like Alfonso Plumber level, I think.
Because I think if it's say transfer, who could be like a double figure scorer? I think transfer Goody, Melendez, Hawkins, and Payne with Epps and Podziemski and Grandison off the bench and Dania. I think that group could be a tournament team. I think that they're probably above a
team. I guess the question is, like, who is that point guard, right? Right? Like, is that point guard Jalen Pickett, right? Like, Jalen Pickett had a great year. He's one of the best grad transfer point guards.
Wait, is that he leaving?
No. What I'm saying is, like, I'm going through, like, the realistic guys who were in the portal last year, right? Like,
yeah.
Tyson Walker, Jalen Pickett, Alonzo Verge, you know, like.
I guess we have to remember, too, that transfer point guards suck until
they stink, right? Like, that's my concern, right? It's, okay, Wendell Green. Like if you plug in any of these guys, you're like, yeah, this sucks, man. Like, this is bad, right? Like, Marcus Carr. You know, like, Marcus Carr is as good of a transfer as you could think, in theory.
We have to make a pact right now to remind ourselves throughout the summer, whenever a team has a transfer point guard. We have to bump him down like 10 spots.
I mean, look.
Because what's going to happen is they're going to add like an Antonio Reeves or something, and we're going to, oh, we have a 20 point game. Montre
Gibson. Yeah.
It's yeah. Be. And we're going to be like, you know what? Illinois is going to be 30th. And then we have to say, no, we're moving them from 30th to 40th.
Let's do it. Let's pick the pack right now.
Pack right now.
Okay. Is that a good way to end the show? Or do we have more to get to?
Jaden Epps was supposed to be on this Providence team. Decommits in the summer. They couldn't really get a replacement. They had to add Mateus Case late, who played in like 10 minutes the whole season. Jaden Epps was supposed to be on this team, and now he's on an Illinois team that Kevin doesn't even think can make the tournament with a transfer point guard.
I mean, I think they'll be fine because I trust Underwood, but like that team could be rough. Like if all the things break against them, that could be like kind of rough.
A lot of people are going to be on the Hawkins breakout.
Maybe. Oh, the Hawkins break on the Melendez, because Melendez is Jaden Ivey.
Yeah.
you just have to not play. So, alrighty, folks, I think that's a podcast. We appreciate you all listening. If you have questions, as always, hit us on Twitter at @CBB_Central for me, at @BradCav2 for Brad. What has Brad tweeted this week? Let's check that before we go.
I don't even know. Let me pull it up too.
Brad's refusal to tweet is very frustrating.
We gotta start producing
some content. People he's like, he does this podcast with Brad Cavallero. Who's this guy? So, yeah, this guy doesn't really like Twitter, but just like produce some
people takes. Say that to you? Yeah.
Yeah, occasionally. People like, yeah, who's this Brad Cav guy?
I'm like a man of mystery.
Oh yeah, make mystery
that,
man.
That you could get 2 hours of basketball takes from every week, 52 weeks out of the calendar year.
Oh yeah. Going from Travis Steele to Sean Miller is such an enormous upgrade. It's hard to stress enough.
I can't even load my tweets.
Is Kevin Willard a better coach than Mark Turgeon? 3 replies, 1 quote tweet. We've got a one person, yes, very much so. One person, yes, but he will wear on the Terp fans quickly. And one from Warner. He's basically the same thing except it's fresh start, so fans don't hate him yet. Well, that's not true. The fans, I think, already hate them. It's crazy to think that back in the preseason, I had Richmond 25 to 30 spots ahead of Iowa in the national rankings. True.
Isn't that crazy to think about, though?
Is there another team that takes out – this is just all podcast takes. Is there another team that takes out all the starters simultaneously like Indiana does? I can't think of another team that does this.
Nobody responded to me. Nobody gave me another team, so –
I can't imagine typing this in November, but it's pretty shocking that Jared Roden got first team All Big East over Jared Bynum.
Okay, that is ridiculous. Especially, I don't know how much Seton Hall TCU you watch or Seton Hall down the stretch. Jared Roden getting first team was like an abomination.
When it was 70 degrees, there was no condensation and no one was slipping. Now it's in the 30s and there's condensation at the same spot on the court at both ends. Very confused. You can't tell me
the roof is leaking on the same end of both courts.
My brain can't compute this. Good old Brad Cav. What a man.
Hey, how about people in Greenville? They were slipping, I guess.
Yeah, very slippery. They must have had a leaky roof like the Friars.
I guess because the original issue, which supposedly has been fixed at the dunk, was that the floor underneath the ice from the Providence Bruins AAA hockey was like seeping up. But supposedly they fixed that. But for the NCAA tournament, the dunk would just melt the ice. But I guess it's too much work to do it for all the Providence games. They just want to do it for those 3 days.
Fair enough.
I don't know why Greenville couldn't just melt the ice. But.
Yeah, what the hell? Ridiculous. All right, we'll wrap this up. We'll see you all next week with a Final Four in hand. So let's do this thing.